almost 60K a month and they might still be working a full-time job. And I think that's like really interesting. I don't know what your thoughts are on the numbers, but.
All right. Well, I'll show you an example that I downloaded this morning to show that you don't have to be on necessarily six figures to take home a decent profit. Actually downloaded it. So this is, I signed an NDA for this. So obviously this can't be shared anywhere, but like, obviously I can share it to you now. Where would it be? It's in my email. Sorry, I keep forgetting I'm on a different browser. Anyways, well, I'll give you context while I'm getting it up. So have you heard of the website Quiet Light?
It's like Flipper, isn't it? Something similar?
It's Flipper. I'd say it's a bit more higher quality than Flipper, but it's a small business buying site. A lot of online businesses, but what I like about it is there's also a lot of offline businesses. Anyways, one came to me today. What I like doing is I love just downloading e-com brands that I've never heard of before and reading their P&Ls. So this is a brand, I won't name them, but they are a jewelry brand in America and they're for sale. And you can see here, they've actually been declining over time. So it's really funny. You read the description, they're a growing business, and then you look at the sales and it's dropping every single year. But outside of that, it's still profitable. They spend about just under 10K in ads. So if you go here, so this is the P&L, right? They do a total income in 2022 of 493K. So that's sales, including wholesale, online and wholesale. And then you can see their COGS is nothing. So their cost of goods is really cheap. So they have high gross margin. They have all their fees, et cetera. You get their gross profit here, about 300,000, 330,000. And then expenses come into it. You can see here that they're spending about 12K, 13K.
Paid ads, 5K.
Facebook ads, paid ads here, sorry, 84K in ads. So averaging less than 10K a month, probably about, what you can see here, about 5 to 7K a month. Anyways, go all the way to the bottom here. Our total income is about, 11K of 500,000 in revenue.
Net profit.
Quick math. It's not that great, right? But they have taken a salary already though. The owner takes a salary of about 40,000, I think it was. It's somewhere here, right, in the salary and expenses. I think if you go on add backs, you can see. I'm pretty sure this is, 42,000 salary plus they make 11K income. You can see here that they lose in a lot of months, but they made a lot in Black Friday in particular, June, of course. Well, actually, no, they don't have end of financial year as big there, but then they have March and April, which is Mother's Day. So they're actually running at a loss for most months and then really make it towards the end, which is interesting. So they would just have to figure out those holes. That would be a red flag for me buying a business. You'd be interested to learn about why they're profitable in those months and what were going on there. But they pay a lot of salaries, right? So like when you're acquiring a business and you're looking, you're like, okay, they are higher. They actually have one, I can do the count right here. 14 different people are being paid. Now, this person doesn't have anything, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So 40 minus 6, 8 people at about part-time, one that's included. The owner is included as one. Mm-hmm. So like really, you've got all these freelancers that as an agency, if you acquire the brand, you can pretty much remove all those expenses immediately. So that's the one. So you immediately turn a business that was making, 11 grand profit, and then you just subtract these expenses, assuming that the growth is at the same next year with no changes. That would mean that immediately the profit almost triples, if not actually quadruples, which means the multiple of the company quadruples. So like, that's where the opportunity of brands like this exist, in my opinion, and why buying it is interesting. There's obviously more challenges to it, though, because, like, for one, the owner is the face of the brand. So, like, how do you deal with that? Like, the name of the brand has that person's name in it. It's growing every single. So why is that happening? And so the other big thing is just, like why is it so negative all these months? Why is that going on? So that's probably a bit of a red flag, number three. That you also look for inefficiencies though, right? Like you look for areas where, because you don't want to buy a business that's just completely booming because it's like, what are you going to add to it? But this business is not, so there's actually opportunity. Mostly pretty interesting though. So anyways, the whole point of me bringing this up is you're like, a business needs to be doing six figures to be profitable and take a salary. Sorry, it needs to be doing six figures to take a salary to be profitable. And on average, you can see here that they're doing only 30K, 40K a month. So really, not necessarily now, that they did 80K in November and that was the only month where they did like a decent income. So like you don't actually necessarily have to be doing six figures to make a decent profit.
Yeah.
Especially if you're buying these businesses rather than relying on full-time job. Like this is rather, if you're at the advantage of already making money and then you're trying to acquire this, this is not actually a bad business to acquire, like businesses like this. So
Yeah. Assuming there's arbitrage in decreasing all overheads, you then would be able to spit out 200K net profit a year, assuming all your salaries are already being paid by the agency or some other thing, right? So it's like you're playing at an unfair advantage of we already pay for staff. So we're just buying additional net profit on top.
Correct. So like you do that plus the benefit of scaling the brand, because e-com brands benefit from making more revenue and spending more in the short term because their economies of scale is so strong with operating being a factor. So like they're only spending five to seven K a month in ads. So if you quadrupled that or tripled it, the advantage of doing that is actually quite high. So that was a good example of a business that I found that would be actually probably an interesting conversation to have. Obviously can't mention who they are. I mean, it was on the screen, I obviously can't show that, but that was
well, I guess this is really interesting.
Like, that's a cool example, you know, I suppose, about how an e-commerce business could be a good acquisition, even if it's like not
is a bit all
crazy profitable.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, you know, it's interesting because we're talking about a lot of different things, not just marketing, but just business in general, right? But like, you know, you see that there's probably a few different routes that you see when people build agencies or service-based businesses. You've got the ones that are, you know, to use an example, Andrew Wilkinson, who has Metal.
Tiny.
He just grows this bad boy and he never, ever sells. He literally would just build Metal Lab to this insane thing, cash cow, then build a holding company, Tiny, and then buy businesses underneath it. And that's how he actually grows. But he would always hold onto the agency for cash, right? There's the other aspect where, so that's scenario one. Scenario two, you just hold the agency forever and that's your cash cow. That's like the likes of like King Kong, you know, like these bigger companies like WME that eventually sell for $15 million. You know, that's the agency and you only pay agency game. Or the other one, which is like Jay Wright, as an example, has an agency, or True Classic, as an example, has an agency. They run it for a while. Then they see the kinks of it and then they go to different thing. They go e-com or coaching or something else more scalable and they ditch the agency. So I guess I'm keen to hear from your perspective, like, you know, if you that is, but this probably extends more beyond agency, but like if you run a service-based business, right, and you're coming into issues of scale, you know, what do you see as like what people should consider or think about when like making that next move from like, all right, next stage of scale, we've seen some success, but what's the next step? How do I get above and beyond
agency, above and beyond an agency?
So how do you scale and what do you think for a lot of these businesses? Like we obviously know the, yeah, what are your thoughts on like, you know, scaling beyond the most agencies hold around the 1 to 2 mil mark?
I mean, the simple answer that we're coming to is sales and retention, which is just increase the sales that come in the door, which means increase the appointments and decrease your churn rate is the simple way of doing it. And your current monthly recurring revenue is just going to be a simple equation of those two. And you just need to ensure that you've minimized the loss and maximized the gain. Alex Mosey is like, no problem's ever solved, wasn't ever solved with more sales. So it's true in that sense. There's like other things in between, obviously, operational challenges. I think the thing we're realizing is look at your staff and really analyze who's bringing in the money and who's not. And as brutal as it sounds, cut out the people in your team who are not, or minimize the people in your team who are not bringing money in directly, despite the relationship you might have. And keep the people and pay the people more who do drive revenue for you. Like for us, it is the people that drive the results for our clients are the ones that bring in the dollars, because that causes clients to spend more and stay longer. And at the end of the day, it's what pays us. So we need more of them. And what we would rather have more money go towards those people than have all these different services that clients don't really even appreciate. So that's where our mindset at the moment with that, it's like exactly oversimplified, but I think it almost sometimes needs to be that simple. It doesn't have to be that complicated. So yeah, we're about more things, but the agency has obviously got its challenges outside of that. I mean, there's relationship that's involved with retention as well. It's like you can't yeah, there's personality that needs to be hired for retaining clients. So it's doing well, I'm sure. On what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it, like, to answer the broader question, it just depends on the game you're trying to play, which will ultimately answer, right? Like, I think you're the type of your own story. So, you know, as business owners, you can build the business or the life you want, whichever direction. And that's like a double-edged sword, because you have the freedom and flexibility to do so, but you also don't have anybody cross-checking or double-checking your answers in the sense of, is this actually the right decision? So you basically just need to figure out what the end goal is. Like, are you trying to own 30 companies under your belt, or are you just trying to own one, or do you want financial freedom, or do you want, like, you know, flexibility schedule? Like, what do you actually want to optimize for? So that's one thing. But to scale an agency specifically, let's just say the ultimate goal is just to scale an agency or a service-based business, I think you're exactly right. Like, the ultimate goal of what you need to do is build a system in place that allows you to consistently and reliably get new clients in, but retain them. And retaining is harder than getting clients, I would say, even though a lot of people struggle with getting clients. I would actually say the harder role is to fulfill. If you get the fulfillment right, you will grow a really great business eventually. Like, on a long enough time horizon, let's just say you're either great at acquisition or you're great at fulfillment. Fulfillment should win longer term. And that's why you see businesses over like 5, 10, 20 years snowball into the giant company, because their fulfillment is great. That over time, they just get this flywheel of referrals. Whereas the businesses that die out are the ones that usually better on acquisition, worse on fulfillment. And they get to a point where they don't want to feed the beast anymore. And then their fulfillment sucks. So then they end up just consistently losing clientele. So if you can get the acquisition right, figure out the amount of clients that you need to bring on board every single month at the cost per acquisition that you can afford, but really dial in on the operation side of things. So fulfillment of retention, delivering well based on what you promise. If you can get that right and obviously pay the right people and put them in the right place, progress them, give them the support they need, give them the pay that they want, then it allows you as a business owner to slowly step away. And I think that that's the for business owners in like a service-based environment to step away. And the only way to do so is to basically like clone yourself or train, put people in the right places. And the only way that you can actually do that is pay top dollar. So there's a lot of things to kind of consider there, but it's really just about acquisition and retention. But the only way you actually do that is systems and people.
Correct. And the other thing, I don't know if you've kind of gone through this process yet, but with staff, once they're around for long enough, they start to really seek a hierarchy to grow into, if that makes sense. Mm. If you don't have a level where they grow, whether it's a leadership team or it's to comms and income, they eventually get bored and don't feel that level of growth that available for them, and they'll just leave, even if they don't personally know why they leave. We've noticed that quite a bit, and that's a new challenge that most businesses, I mean, in the e-commerce service space, right, that if you're hiring people, like, you wouldn't think that, oh, I need to actually have a plan on how they're going to develop, and that means that I need to put things in place for them to learn. I need them to make sure that they're exposed to new experiences and people, try different roles, make sure that they're, like, when they start figuring out what they want to do more and more of, I enable that for them. And also be prepared to let them go too, because people might outgrow your business as well. Like, all these things are part of like human resources and culture management that we're learning as we're growing as well. And it's a tough pill to swallow, but like the end of the day, there's heaps of people out there. Like, you can always replace, you know, hire or replace. And it sucks that it's not a fun process, right? You have to, it's a long process to train people up. Though that's the well, you need to have those systems for people. Otherwise they just leave.
It's like growth is the answer to most things, even though, you know, you've got two mindsets around it, right? Like the growth in sales, like you mentioned, the solution for most businesses, because even if you look at it at a really like you zoom out a little bit, if you stay the same, right? Because, you know, there's this ideology that as a business, why grow really big? And I get that. I understand it. Like, you don't want to grow to the point where you're just adding numbers for no reason, right? Because that's more stress, less dollars. Like, what's the point? But if you think about it, inflation grows at whatever percent per year. What is it, like 4 or 5% or something like that?
Yeah.
even if you stayed the same every single year, you are effectively going backwards every single year unless you grow, because you're losing purchasing power every year. So if you stay at the same headcount, let's just say you're at 5 people in your agency and you're like, this is a really manageable, or maybe realistically like 7, because one person can manage like 6 or 7 people, right? You stay at that size, it's really enjoyable. That's probably where you're going to get a lot of net profit, a lot of time, amazing culture. It's the easiest to manage. If you stay at that same size every single year, you will slowly lose like money by staying the same size, just through inflation alone. Coupled with the fact that if you're not growing, your staff, even if there's an amazing culture, they will get disincentivized to stay with you. They will get disengaged because they're not growing and progressing. So the answer as a business owner is you do actually need to grow, whether you like it or not, whether it's, you know, 30 or 40% per year. It doesn't need to be significant, but like year on year, you do need to actually grow. You do need to get more clients and progress your business in a way that allows your existing staff members to stay engaged. So just to beat inflation, just to keep your existing employees engaged, because if you don't like keep your existing employees engaged and they leave, every single time you add in a new team member or replace them, you're effectively like restarting your business over again. Because think about the amount of time and training and effort and the systems that you've put into this person and then they leave, you now need to restart that whole process again. So, you know, I've seen businesses that have turned over 3 or 4 staff and it's like a completely different business. The service quality is completely changed purely because of that. And I think that not enough business owners think about that.
It also creates security too, hey? Like having growth creates security for people in the company to think it's growing. I'm now on a boat, I'm on a vehicle that's moving forward, versus when it's stagnant or the clients or customers and sales, people start to get fearful and don't feel secure in their jobs. So there's probably that element to it too, another big human need. So having growth is great for people. They want to feel grow, but they also want to feel comfortable, that they're secure. So having sales is really important there too. So yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that is pretty much the main solution for most problems.
Yeah, 100%. So I just want to end on this, like, just because we only got a few more minutes left, but 2024, I know everyone talks about like New Year's resolution. I don't know if you set them, but I'm keen to hear about you. Like, what are your thoughts on 2024 from a business and a marketing perspective? Like, what's your, just on everything?
Okay. I got my personal ones. In terms of business ones though, I would say, we have our annual meeting on Monday. And in that we have outlined in, you know, it's going to be a 100 slide document, right? In the year. So we booked a hotel and we're going to do that. I think it's a good idea to do that with your team, because it gets everyone together. No one's focusing on work. It's in a different setting. No distractions. So I think rallying the team is important, and not focusing so much on the next 3 or 5 years too, because we keep doing that and then people get confused and they don't remember that vision and they're not as attached to that vision. They're too short-term thinkers. So during the next 12 months, remind them of the big vision, like, hey, conglomerate company, own cool e-com brands, make lots of money, but next 12 months is what we're doing. So that's how we position it. And for us, it's all about getting the owners out of the business, profitability, in maximizing profit. And like, that means basically getting as many clients for the current per head, I suppose. So getting as much money per head that's hired, going ham and hiring more people and growing with more people. So we've restructured the company a little bit already to do that. So we have a bunch of spaces now to fit clients, and that's what goal is there. So just maximize profitability on that front. And then the other side of it, of course, is, you know, we've got our course business, which you know about, that is highly profitable as it gets to a certain size. So going really aggressive in that growth. So using one company to subsidize the other. And then once it gets to a certain size, using that as a cash cow to basically market ourselves more aggressively, to have more cash to spend on staff and growth activities. And yeah, to build that side of things. So for us, it's really just those focuses, to be honest. And like I said before, sales retention, we maintain at a certain rate and then achieve, you know, we have a sales KPI every single month. As long as we do those two things, then we'll hit up this year. What about yourself?
Yeah, nice. No, that's awesome. I really love that idea of like getting the teams and really talking about not only just a long-term goal, but like short-term goals. I try to do that as well with my team. I was on a holiday and only back this week, so I'm actually doing it next Monday. But every year, I set pretty ambitious goals for myself personally and professionally. But the only issue is that I don't think I've ever hit the professional goal ever. Like, I'm so aggressive and optimistic. Same. And I think things change throughout in every single year that every single year that I don't hit it, I feel so demoralized by the end of the year. So I pretty much like super undershot my 2023 target because of a lot of different things. And I don't think it's a lack of effort or a lack of trying. I think it's just a lack of the circumstance. So this year, obviously I'm going to set targets and I've set a target for the team to grow, but I'm more focused on just themes. And I think that one of the themes that I'm really, two themes that I'm really just focusing on, and I'll be okay with, you know, whatever happens in this year is what happens, and whether we grow or don't, or start this business or buy into this or whatever it is, I think that like I'm leaving it open-ended, but as long as I'm staying laser focused and super ruthless in decision-making, I think that that's kind of what I'm leaning more towards. So instead of setting a New Year's resolution, it's more so just being in tune with how I want to behave. So laser focus is because I think 2023 was very like grow in a lot of different areas. We're trying to like do a lot of different things, explore a lot of tactics, try SEO, try ads, try this, try, you know, content, just everything under the sun, explore a lot of different businesses, things like that. And I think that without laser focus, you don't really get exponential return on like improvement, I guess. And then ruthless in decision making. I think that a lot of times as a business owner, after reflecting, you know, we have the right answer almost like 90% of the time, like immediately, like after, you know, consuming a bit of the information, you pretty much know what the answer is, but it's because you're not ruthless enough. Jeff Bezos said something around like emotionless pragmatism is what like keeps a company alive versus like, I think it's like ignorance and optimism is like what starts a company, but emotionless pragmatism is what keeps a company alive. And that's the ruthlessness aspect. Like you can be happy and optimistic about starting something and get it off the ground, but really what's going to make you succeed is like having the balls to make the tough decisions when you know that's the decision. And regardless of the emotion, regardless of anything, regardless of the relationships of the people around you, it's like, if you know this is the answer, you've got to do it. And I think that's kind of in line with the way I want to behave this year. So 2024 is the year for me of just being super laser focused on like, where I want to go, how do I get there, just staying on course, and then being ruthless about it.
That's a good one. What's the end it? What did you say? Emotional pragmatism? Is it the word?
Emotionless pragmatism.
Emotionless pragmatism. Be that one EP decision for you this year, do you believe?
I think it's sacrificing different service and product lines that aren't serving us, and then being very ruthless around, do we have the team and the systems that can execute what we're trying to go for? So, you know, as an example, we get a client that is full service and they want a website, they want SEO, they want ads, everything like that, right? Being very emotionless and very critical and like, okay, where are we actually trying to grow? What is the one service or the one area that we really want to serve and we want to do it well? And does this fit it? And if it doesn't, cool, we either just let them go and just be okay with it of losing that excess, you know, revenue top line, say no to 50 to 100 grand or whatever it is, right? But, you know, again, being ruthless and staying on course and saying, you know, this decision to sacrifice is going to serve us longer down the track. So I think that is one example of like emotionless pragmatism. Yeah.
Wow. That's fair. It's comfortable letting go of people that aren't serving the main need of sales growth. So doing that and then moving that capital as much as possible into the sales and marketing side of team, the growth team, doing that and letting go of people and that align with is the big EP.
Good one. As a business owner, it's like, you know, we've all struggled with that, letting people go or making the decision. Again, this is one of the things like, you know, it's the decision to make, but it's just so hard to do it. But what helped me to kind of get around that or be comfortable with those decisions is like there's this book called The Six Habits. I think it's Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. I forgot the author, but it talks about, like, you know, why we become insecure and why we attach different emotions to certain things. And one of the things, like, us as human beings, we attach our work and our success to our own self-esteem, but it's not reality. Like, as entrepreneurs and business owners, our personality and DNA is almost tied to our business. As an example, if the business is doing really well, you would almost bet on the weekend you're cheering, you're happy about everything. When your business is in the shitter and it's doing really bad, you would have a really sour personality. You would go and you'd be angry about everything. But in the reality of it all is that as human beings, we are just human beings that run a business. And whether the business does well or not, it's independent of us as people. So with that line of thinking, if you need to let someone go, it's a business decision. It's not a human being decision. Like, if I'm letting you go as Jason Lee, the person, it's not that. It's Jason, the business owner of Journey Digital. Journey Digital is the entity based on the Journey Digital culture, values, objectives. It does not align, and that's okay. You probably fit somewhere else. That doesn't mean that me as a person or human being hates you or dislikes you. It's purely a business thing. So then you put the onus on the business and you kind of separate your own self-esteem from the business itself. And I think that that's a really powerful decision. So then you talk about, you know, the misalignment and then values and the objectives and what the business needs, because it's not you. For me anyway, that's a tactic or a way that I rationalize it to make it a little bit easier to have those difficult conversations. So
that's cool. And to end on a light and quick one sentence, a personal goal of yourself for 2024.
I think a personal goal is that I really want to, one thing that I found in 2023 was I was doing a lot of things that I didn't enjoy. And I think that what that, you know, running a business, there's a lot of things that are super unenjoyable, like managing P&Ls, or like a lot of admin, or just like analyzing processes, systems, or doing these things and jumping back and forth. Whereas one of my strengths and things that I love is like the marketing side of things. I love marketing. I love building funnels. I love writing copy, content marketing. And I think in one sentence, I want to do more of that and less of the things I don't want. So I think as business owners, we forget that if you don't want to do something, you don't actually have to do it. And I think that that is something that we get trapped into a lot of the time. And I got super trapped into it 2023, where, you know, something would happen. I'm like, I don't want to do it, but I'm a business owner. I'm a hustler. I'm gonna just do it and smash through it. But in reality, like, you're a business owner, you have capital, you have resources, you can deploy capital and resources to things you don't enjoy. And they get it wrong, that's okay. Get someone else to do it. Like, it's this change of methodology and like ideology that you don't have to do everything. So I want to do less of the shit things that I don't like and more of the things I actually do like, and be more resourceful. Not resourceful, sorry. Be better at delegating, I think is the best.
Yeah, that's awesome. Be better at delegation. Mine's really random, but I've recently just been constantly hammered with this idea of the importance of storytelling. So my goal for 2024 is to intentionally tell more stories and get better at telling stories. So I've been reading a lot about it, watching videos, and trying to actively practice tell stories. So if you notice that, just watch and try not to smirk. But I'm actively trying to be a better storyteller, because that is the way that there's a part of the brain that's wired to remember things based on stories. It is a very unfair advantage. It's also used a lot in marketing to sell. I become better at that. So that's my goal for 2024, become a better storyteller.
Dude, I love it. Maybe every single week to start with the story or like something that you learn that week. Something.
Sorry, Bryce, you just freezed out for a second. Yeah.
I just, and then you're just like sitting there in silence. No, I was like, all right, never mind. Right, I'm shit
no,
idea.
Keen. We'll no, I like it. It's a good idea. Let's do it. We'll start off with a story next week. All righty, dude.
I'll take it. Mate. See ya.